Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. Victory Day, May 9th, 1945, May 9th, 2023. Ukraine has been invaded by the Russian Federation. What that means is going to be presented to us within these next hours in Moscow. The parade, the flyovers, the hesitation, the heraldry. We're presuming good weather, but in any event, Victory Day is deeply ironic now in the second year of the Ukraine conflict. Ukraine's been invaded by an authority, a sovereign power, that believes it was saved by a miracle in 1945. Part of that miracle was Ukraine. Part of the success of the Soviet army was to dislodge the Germans out of Crimea, fought a ferocious battle. Oh. Hence the irony that Ukraine is now celebrating Victory Day on May 8th because it doesn't want to join in sympathy with Moscow. Katrina Vandenhove, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine, is here. She knows all these ironies. It's profound to consider that this is a group of people who have been together through the worst possible circumstances in their lives. Many of the people who remember as children the deprivations of 1945 are with us today to celebrate Victory Day in Ukraine and Russia. Katrina, when I lay it in front of you, it's unbelievable where we've reached. These two nations who fought villainy are now fighting each other. Good evening to you, Katrina.
Thank you, John. I'm going to speak about Russia, Soviet Union, and Victory Day. My understanding is Ukraine has changed the name. It's no longer Victory Day, it's Europe Day. I believe that's the case. But Victory Day in Russia is, even though it's been weaponized in this war between Russia and Ukraine, is a hallowed day for millions of people. I think what's not understood in this country, and it's not clear why, maybe education, but many people don't know that Russia, the Soviet Union, fought against Germany. But also the numbers, John, the numbers, 25 million, 27 million. There is a ceremony that started a few years ago under Putin where people would bring pictures to Red Square and around the country holding large-sized pictures of their relatives who'd been killed in the war. And Putin, I believe, brought his grandfather and others brought grandmothers, grandfathers, aunts, uncles. What's striking is in our country, there's so little experience, really, because the World War II Museum in New Orleans, which was run by historian Stephen D'Ambrose and sends out mailings every year from Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg, their material, their direct mail, is as if the Red Army loped by. So there's a misunderstanding of how hallowed the day is. And it's a week of holiday in the former Soviet Union and Russia. So it's now been weaponized. And in the sense of when it's brought up, now many, including inside Russia, certainly those who fled the country, treat it as abused and used by Putin for his own purposes, as opposed to this holiday that had a reality and an authenticity.
The horror is that we're told there's something big coming, a counteroffensive, it's called sometimes. And the Russian response is unknown. I don't have any confidence that what I'm announcing is true. I'm just repeating what I've read. The counteroffensive will lead to the deaths of many people, Katrina. We don't have the numbers. And then we're told they'll talk. Why do we need to sacrifice, again, human sacrifice, in order to reach the table? I can't answer that question. Can you?
Well, I will make the case for why Ukraine says it needs to keep fighting to have more, to have more strength at the table, whatever the table looks like. But it looks at the moment as if the attacks on Kyiv, which were mounted, I believe, early this morning or late last night, are some sign of a counteroffensive launching. It's not clear the state of the mud, which is a real situation, nor is it clear how far things will get. It could be a foot, a few meters. And whether that's ruled considered a counteroffensive on the part of Ukraine, well, it's unclear. I do see in the media, John, and I'm not in reading Ukrainian media, but this idea that even if Ukraine doesn't make a major counteroffensive or gain much land, that we should still continue to support. And, you know, I think the shifting goalposts will be part of our scenario. Well, I mean, the desperate need for an immediate ceasefire in Ukraine leading to negotiations is something that people here in the establishment have talked about following the counteroffensive. But who's going to measure and weigh and understand a counteroffensive if we're still in this state, John, as we talked about? Fog of war is not adequate to describe the opacity that we learn little glimmers. We see little glimmers through leaks. I mean, Discord leaks has produced more clarity than much, and their denials, et cetera. So then it becomes murky again. But they've been clarifying those files.
War ends are unimaginable at this point. So I just want to comment on something that I think is missing, which is the American people, Katrina. You know, I'm utopian in this. I believe that the national leadership, having committed itself to Ukraine, is best to ask the American people our opinion. And I don't think that's happened yet. There's not been an address by the president. And in the reelection campaign that I've seen so far, again, Ukraine is not brought up. The American people deserve an opinion. This is our
national American people. Of course they deserve, but I don't remember a time in our recent history, contemporary history, that the American people have been given a choice in these matters, like Vietnam, you know, or Iraq, Afghanistan. These are led and launched by the establishment. In the Times yesterday, the New York Times, there was a comment that we have a blob so that they can lead us into war. But I do think that a group, the Quincy Institute, for example, and I think The Nation magazine, which I've edited for many years, the belief that you can't have true democracy at home with endless war abroad. And I don't think that's posed to the American people. And when it is, you do get Americans who want to be secure. They don't want to be isolationists, but they don't want to be crusading across the globe. So I do agree with you that the American people are really asked. The need to democratize foreign policy is something that's been discussed and on the agenda for years and years. But we're certainly far from it. And lots of secrecy.
It might be that if the American people are asked, do we continue to support Ukraine? Might be a resounding yes.
And there might be, but it's not been put to the test, as you note. And I do think there are people, and there are people who do support sending weapons to Ukraine. What I don't think is known is how many U.S. advisors or trainers are nearby, because Biden said very clearly at the outset, which I think muted the American voice, that there will be no American men or women fighting in Ukraine. And there's a kind of cowardice in that. But no one wants to see their sons or daughters go off to fight. And that's what triggered some element of popular opposition to Vietnam, not launching the war, but in trying to shut it down.
Do you hear peace talked in the left of center circles? We have 30 seconds. Do you hear peace, the word peace?
Ending the scourge of war. I do hear peace. Steve Walt, who's a realist, not a lefty progressive, had a very brilliant op-ed a few years ago, why peace has become subversive. It's kind of a subversive word. And I think it ceasefire, ending war, building back lives, sovereign democracy. I do think sovereign democracies are very hard to last and exist with the ravages of war.
Katrina Vandenhove, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine. I'm John.